David Barsamian will be speaking as a benefit for KBOO Community Radio Friday, May 13th at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. David is the host of Alternative Radio, now in its 30th year, and an award-winning investigative journalist. He will be speaking on one of the most critical issues we are faced with today, saving the planet that sustains us. Again, that's Friday, May 13th at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. All proceeds will benefit KBOO, your community radio station. Tickets and information for this event can be found at kboo.fm/Barsamian2016.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, Portland, and welcome to Labor Radio. Today, April 11th, 2016. Tonight, we are going to be talking about Labor Notes Conference 2016 that happened in Chicago last weekend. I'm your host, Ann McDonald, here with co-host Fernando Gapacin. Hello, Fernando.
Hey.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Tonight's guests are Jeffrey Crosby, adjunct faculty in labor studies at UMass Boston, president of the North Shore Labor Council, and he's with the AFL-CIO Central Labor Council. Jeffrey, are you there?
I am.
All right. Thank you for joining us. And tonight in the studio, we have Hyung-Kyu Nam. He's with the Oregon Education Association and an activist with Healthcare for All Oregon. Hyung, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
And we've got John Feeney, a plumber with UA Local 290. Hi, John.
Hi.
Good to see you. So we've got some Labor Radio is of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. Got some working class folks here to talk about labor notes. Fernando, you kind of know a lot of the background of what exactly labor notes is. Anyone who doesn't know is kind of missing a piece of an important piece of the labor movement today. Can you explain a little bit about what labor notes is?
Well, labor notes is a nonprofit organization that was formed by rank and file union members and grassroots activists. It's officially known as the Labor Education and Research Project, but it's known by the name of its publication, which is Labor Notes. It was founded in March 1979, and it was dedicated to the revitalization of the labor movement through social movement unionism and union democracy. And what they sought to do was to connect the grassroots rank and file struggles of many unions and to bridge the gaps between isolated rank and file caucuses, like in the Teamsters, the steel workers, the auto workers, the communication workers, teachers, carpenters, retail workers, and others. In 2016, they had their annual conference. It started in, it's every 2 years.
Right.
Started in 1981. And they had 2,200 people show up to this last conference in Chicago. And they celebrated the troublemaker schools. They taught skills. They actually linked together many global labor struggles. And the emphasis was on solidarity. One of the founders, Kim Moody, commented on how what he saw with the labor movement in America right now is a lot of polarization. And he didn't have a sense of which direction the labor movement was going to go. Mark Brenner, who's the director of Labor Notes, indicated some optimism with the fact that troublemaker schools are growing throughout the country and thousands of rank-and-file members are attending these schools. He also commented on how Bernie Sanders is a subscriber to Labor Notes.
And, oh, I didn't know that.
And indicated great optimism that the presidential candidate is a Labor Notes subscriber. But David Moberg, senior editor of In These Times, pointed out that although Labor Notes represents the progressive future of the labor movement, it's only a very small fraction of that labor movement. And in fact, it's a subculture. And in order for this to actually develop as a main part of revitalizing labor movement, rank and filers got to rebuild their unions. So partially this is what this show's about.
So for any of you, was this your first Labor Notes conference?
Yeah, this was my first for me.
And what was your kind of feeling about, was it what you expected or...
Yeah, I mean, even more so just because of the timing of the one-day action and strike led by CTU in Chicago. But it wasn't just CTU. There was, you know, Black Lives Matter.
Chicago Teachers Union.
But, you know, joined along with them, Black Lives Matter, Fight for 15, a broader movement of social justice and working class beyond just the CTU as well.
And did you, Feeney, did you attend the rally downtown at the...
I did not attend it. I did watch it on the news that evening, though, and it was quite a big showing there.
It was. It was really remarkable. I think that's the best way to see downtown Chicago is with... do you know how many people were down there?
You know, I saw one thing in the Chicago Tribune that really underestimated the numbers. I know that the expectation was 40,000, and it was hard to tell, but, I mean, definitely thousands. And I actually started my day... I got a phone call that woke me up. I don't know why. I was planning on waking up at 5:30 in the morning anyway, but I woke up at 4:50. And so we went out to the picket lines at 6 a.m. And so we were there at, I forget the name of the elementary school. You know, we didn't even realize how early it was. And the Chicago teachers, they came out with percussions, all kinds of stuff, very high energy.
Yes.
Early in the morning with parents and students and a whole delegation of us from Labor Notes joining them, just making all this noise, chanting things like, we pay taxes, why don't they, bankers and billionaires ought to pay? And, you know, doing this at like, people are still sleeping.
Right.
I kind of forgot. And people, you know, talked to us kind of nicely later on saying, you know, I was working at the bar till 3 a.m. and trying to sleep. But just amazing high energy, you know, since the pickets in the morning and people moving throughout the city and then meeting up all together at the rally at the end of the day.
So we have two teachers here, Younger West Coast, and Jeffrey, you're East Coast there. So what was your reaction to the Chicago teacher strike and everything that happened out there?
Yeah, I missed the rally also. I didn't know they were expecting 40,000. I read somewhere it was 14,000. And if that, even that was true, who knows what the actual number was, but that's huge. And what people, by all accounts, it was terrific. And especially what I thought was really critical was that everybody said there were a ton of parents there. And, you know, that's what the CTU has done from the beginning. They've developed a vision of a public service, you know, what they call the schools our children deserve. And that's kind of the stake they put in the ground, and that's what they fight for. And they've done it in a way that builds public support for their union, but because their union is in a position to fight for the public good, in this case, the public schools, they position themselves really well. There were a lot of them at the... Labor Notes conference on different panels, and so that was, you know, they were always impressive. I've been to, I think I might have been to all of them since the 80s, unless I think I was out of the country once or twice, but I go really regularly, and it's always inspirational. There were some speakers, there was a, for example, there in the plenary session, there was a woman farm worker from Mexico, and the struggle. I hadn't heard about it at all. Just, I think 16,000 or something farm workers and fighting troops and just under brutal conditions and fighting for a company that eventually sells their products as Nicholson. And, you know, that was inspirational. There was a lot of that. I would have liked to see, you know, a little bit more kind of strategy discussion, and maybe that's because I've been going to them for so long. Hmm. You know, there's always upsurges. There's always some good fights going on. There's always some heroic stories. I would have been interested if they could have sort of housed a debate, and they're probably the only people that can do it. There's nothing like this in the movement compared to what they offer. Things like... well, like New Labor Forum had a debate. They had, I think his first name was Lance Compa, who used to be a UE organizer, and he was saying that traditional unionism is being ignored, excuse me, and people are kind of a little bit overly excited about what they call alternative labor, or all, you know, worker centers, new forms of organizing isn't necessarily getting that much. And then they had a response to that from five people, the next issue. And, you know, the political situation, I mean, what do we do about kind of the stranglehold of the new Confederacy, which is how I think of it, is 26 states. We have an extreme right wing. This is not your mom's Republican Party. I say that because my mom was Republican. You know, what do we do about that? And how do we approach that? What do we do politically? And so, you know, that's the kind of discussion I think would be pretty interesting. And they're in a position to house that kind of a discussion in a kind of a principled way, because the culture of their events is really good. I mean, people listen to each other. There's not a bunch of people, you know, grabbing a mic, making speeches all the time and driving everybody nuts. So, you know, it's all in all, it's a terrific, terrific event. And I can't imagine the amount of work that goes into it to pull that off.
Absolutely. This was my second Labor Notes event. I went 2 years ago, and that was just as we were getting organized in the restaurants at the Oregon Zoo. And I had no idea what I was in for. It completely woke me up to what is going on nationwide. It's really easy to be insular and look at what struggle you're facing with your own work group, within your own local. But then seeing 2,200 people, there were, I think, 22 countries represented, 130 some odd people from across the globe, sharing stories, bringing their struggles, and really sharing tactics and their experience. And there's something that it's really hard to describe as far as the energy it really injects into you. I've come back to town wired and just ready to, you know, go back to the zoo and share what I've learned with my shop stewards and bring that energy back here. So as far as like how the event itself is structured, there's a lot of workshops, plenary sessions. We do have a nice little banquet in the evening, and then there's a little bit of partying going on afterwards. But the workshops themselves were, everyone gets a chance to learn something new and share their stories. Would any of you like to talk about maybe some of the workshops that you attended that stood out to you?
Sure. I could start. I actually was put on a panel on one of the mornings with several teachers talking about teacher evaluations, and it was enlightening for me because I not only learned from the other panel members but the other participants. And I think one of the things that I saw not only in that workshop but throughout Labor Notes is being able to clearly see the struggle that we all share, what we're up against. And I think it's not just for teachers. I mean, so the panel I was on was about teacher evaluations. And basically what you could see clearly is that not only standardized testing, but teacher evaluations are used as a tool to attack the unions, attack academic freedom, and basically use these tools to basically undermine labor. And, you know, we also saw that from before the panel started, we also met up with teachers from Mexico, from the I think it's a CTNE, where they've been struggling against really the same thing. And I think for a lot of us, it's easier to recognize the clear class war that happens when we see it in other places. Like in, for instance, with the Mexican teachers, some of them are in prison right now. We know that many Mexican teachers people become radicalized through the teacher education programs there. And those 43 people in the teacher education program that went missing and that were probably killed were part of this struggle. But one of the things that we learned from this delegation of Mexican teachers is that teachers are being subjected to standardized testing every 4 years. And they're basically fighting privatization that's being pushed using education reform and standardized testing. And so anyway, I think our struggles are much more apparent when we see that in other places, whether it be Mexico. We also had teachers from actually the president of the NUT in the UK, where they're fighting off privatization of all their schools basically being converted into academies. So again, we're able to see how, no matter what our local struggle is, we see this common thread of what we're up against. And basically, we're up against things like corporate takeover of public education, through privatization of, either component parts or the entire thing, and using tools like standardized testing or evaluation to do that.
For those of you just joining in, we are talking about the 2016 Labor Notes Conference. This is KBOO 90.7 FM.
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Love it. As a newer organizer, a lot of the workshops I attended focused more on just basic organizing. We had a brother from Tennessee talking about, as a right-to-work state, where he works, they don't even have a contract. An issue that a lot of work groups face is during a contract campaign, they have a contract action team that will come together and fight for certain issues that they are important to them in their contract. And then once the contract is voted on and people move on and kind of the energy kind of dissipates a little bit, in a right-to-work state where they don't have a contract, that's not a problem. Organizing constantly, talking to people, talking to workers, trying to turn them into members. It's something that we've dodged a bullet as a public sector worker with the Friedrichs case, with the Supreme Court case that would have potentially created a so-called right-to-work anti-worker legislation nationwide. So that's something that we've got to, I'm bringing back to the zoo. We've got to know who our workers are, know where they stand, and then connect with them like daily. John, you're a plumber, you're a private sector, a tradesman.
That's right.
What are some of the lessons that you're bringing back to Portland? How do you think you'll be implementing it?
Well, one of the things that one of the classes that I went to was Beating Apathy, and I'm pretty excited about the future of the labor movement for our area because we have a lot of bright young people that are starting to get more engaged, and that's pretty evident by the amount of people that came just from my local. We had 17 members show up.
That's brilliant.
And one of the things we took away from that conference is the importance of information sharing and building a network of solidarity within our local, as well as among other locals. And there's also a building trades meeting that we went to. It was, I believe, one of the first ones, or the first one, that they had at Labor Notes. And we had a number of trades present. And what we found was that we're all having similar problems, and mainly it's membership involvement, and I see that as something that the membership is looking to turn around and step up and really get involved. And it affects so many different things and so many different involvement is key to success in anything that we do. So We're looking to initiate a membership action plan for involvement to get members active in any way. And part of it's social events, part of it's charity. And that's one thing that I feel like a lot of my guys got excited when they went there, and they're coming back with a new look at the way things are and how they can be.
Wow, 17 people is a really great group to be sending to an event like this.
Oh, we were lucky, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fabulous.
Yeah, my labor's Local 483 sent 10 people. And, you know, when I hear about things like this, it shows a real commitment in some unions to invest in their members. That kind of, you know, leadership skills that they learn, empowerment, just the excitement that they gain, is something that's hard to generate at a membership meeting from month to month. There's a lot of people that are looking to get plugged in, but they don't want to be a shop steward. They're not sure what their role could be. They've got the desire, but they don't know where to put it.
One of the things that that Mark Brenner pointed out was that he attributed to the growth and the interest of Labor Notes. When I started being interested in Labor Notes was back in 1979, and it was sort of a dissident center where all of the folks who were trying to fight for democracy, trying to reform the union movement, seemed to gather. And Mark pointed out that with the underutilization of union cities and the failure of Change to Win and the demise of union-based education, that Labor Notes has sort of filled a niche. I wanted to ask Jeff, in terms, you being a labor educator, how would you talk about some of the comments that Kim Moody raised about the depression of the labor movement, which we see, you know, some of it being countered here. I mean, people are building because Labor Notes is organizing here, and also what he commented on in terms of the deep-seated racism that exists within the labor movement. I mean, these are some
Let me comment on that. First of all, not as a labor educator, but somebody who worked in a factory for 33 years for GE. And that's, you know, one of the things that I would like to have more discussion about is, in our circumstances, I really felt I've taken a group of Labor Notes people from my local, and now I've retired from there. Now there's other people going, you know, for 20 years. And I felt like we did a lot of pretty heroic stuff. We had a very high level of involvement. And, you know, over the 33 years that I went there, we went from 8,700 people down to about 1,400. And for 20 years at that time, I was the president of the local, so no one to blame but myself and our inability to turn that around. And what concerns me is if we posit the answer to the decline of the labor movement, which is extraordinary. I mean, we're where we were in the 1920s. That the answer is sort of member involvement. And the member involvement is fundamental to anything, no matter what we do. You know, it's got to be the base of it. But where do we go with that? You know, how do we, you know, and I'm more with Kim than I think perhaps with what Mark said. I think it's true that as Mark put it, the troublemaking wing of the labor movement is growing. And it's also noticeable, I think, I don't know about, I mean, Mark Demenstein was there, he was the national president of the APW Postal Workers. 2 years ago, Tafari Cabre was there, was executive vice president of the AFL-CIO, the state teachers president of the NEA affiliate in Massachusetts was there. So that's really noticeable. You're starting to get some you know, higher up leaders who, you know, pretty good people have worked their way into these positions over years. So that trend's really positive, but the country as a whole is going to the right. And the last year may change that. This year, I'm not really sure what's going on, and I find this a very hard moment to analyze. You have a consistent move to the right, especially at the state level, and we get sort of bamboozled by these national elections. Meanwhile, state by state, the extreme right is like a stranglehold, You know, they're passing laws in Tennessee, for example, that no city can pass any law that raises the minimum wage or allows prevailing wage, or pass a bill that disallows discrimination against LGBTQ folks. And that's called preemption. That's happening all over the South, some places in the Midwest. Right to Work just won in West Virginia. That's the first Northeastern state. And I think it's at 26 states, although Wisconsin got thrown out today, actually, by the courts, which is great. So that's the kind of trend that concerns me. And I'm not, it's hard for me to be as optimistic as you would feel sitting in, at the labor notes, which has so much energy and so much excitement and so many great people, as they said. So I'm trying to figure out what this moment is. And I find I'm more with Kim. It's kind of hard to read because you've got some pretty flagrant racist appeals around immigration and around black folks. And you got a presidential candidate who ran, subscribes to labor notes. You got another one that's encouraging mob violence against black people openly. And if that's become a pretty big part of the national debate now. So it feels like the 20s in that way. So I think there's a lot going on right now. I don't think it's there's a consolidated positive trend. I think it's a very contested, very difficult, very critical moment, and we need to talk strategy about what we're going to do about it.
Well, I'm a correspondent for Labor Notes. In the local areas that I've seen, Labor Notes is actually organizing. In Portland, Joanna Brenner has been really playing a real positive role in terms of organizing folks, like the folks in 290, for instance. And we see bits and pieces of that going on around the country. And if folks are interested in contacting Labor Notes, you can contact me at 503-917-1286. And I'll make sure that you get plugged in with the folks who are actually doing the work of Labor Notes in this area, at least in the Portland area.
Now, from my understanding, in the past, Labor Notes hasn't been a very political event, but this year there was a large Labor for Bernie contingent that was out there. There were a few gatherings around that. And perhaps that's a positive sign, more, you know, directly in how we can affect presidential campaigns and in politics locally here in Oregon. You know, we were worried about Friedrichs. We kind of dodged that, but we've definitely got some ballot measures coming up this November that are really important, and something that I know at my local we're talking about. And probably at some others as well, is the need to get out and talk to non-members, get community involvement as far as what these ballot measures mean. And not just that, John, what you're talking about with people coming back and you know, volunteerism, community outreach, being involved in the community, not labor as something that happens at work and you go home and it doesn't matter anymore, but something that's a lifestyle type of thing. And that's a big picture to try to. We've got like 2 minutes left, so I'm not trying to get too in depth into that. But if anybody has any comments on,
sure. I mean, I could just jump in very briefly. Again, I think going back to the CTU and what they did. I mean, just recently, they were out in the streets along with. You know, people outside the CTU not only fighting against their contract struggle, which is, you know, has everything to do with, you know, cutting their pensions, to cut closing more schools, changing their steps and lanes, but they turned it into, instead of just the contract struggle about pay and pensions, they turned it into a broader struggle for talking about things like, you know, opposing Rahm Emanuel and also demanding an elected school board, also demanding police accountability board, but also talking about taxing the rich, having a progressive income tax in Illinois, also talking about taxing financial transactions. So I think they broaden their struggle that connects to their actual local struggle as educators, but that connects up with the community. And, you know, one of the workshops I went to also featured not only a CTU member, but also someone from the Steelworkers and IBEW. And it was a workshop on direct action. And they're talking about how these, starting out with even low-risk kind of tactics, for instance, they looked at who was the beneficiary of TIF money. And so they did a grading at the Bank of America. And so coming up with these kinds of tactics that build people's confidence, come up with creative ways of engaging with the public and working and building up from there. And we see what CTU did. I mean, they started out with a small group of teachers that read the Shock Doctrine together, and they transformed and radicalized this larger union.
Wow.
One of the things that I do know is that Plumbers 290, rank and file plumbers, are actually out there trying to organize with the plumbers. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. The plumbers and pipe fitters. Yeah. We are actively organizing. Yes.
I mean, the rank and filers are doing it themselves.
We do have members. Mostly the ones that are organized in are the most helpful in helping organize in those that are unorganized.
Member leaders. That's what it takes. All right, shucks, guys. I hate to cut it off, but it's now 6:30, and we've run out of time. Thank you, Hyung, John, and Jeff, for joining us this evening. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for doing this.
And
have a good night.
Yeah, you guys definitely have a good night. And thank you for listening, and stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
The religion of Judaism and the political philosophy of Zionism must be completely separate.